The title of the sermon, Racism, Our Country's Original Sin, comes from a book by the Reverend Jim Wallace, who is an evangelical minister. He's one of the good guys. He's the founder of the Sojourners Community and the Sojourner Magazine, named after Sojourner Truth. His book is called America's Original Sin, Racism, White Privilege, and the Bridge to a New America. It was written in 2016, and I commend it to you. He is one of my heroes. He walks his talk. He talks about history in our earliest days, all the way until today, including his own experience. He talks about the Native Americans on reservations, African slavery, the treatment of Chinese in early California, the Jim Crow laws, Japanese and German internment camps in World War II, the large percentage of people of color in our prisons, detention centers for undocumented in this country today, 200 centers, 9 in California, and the shootings of unarmed black, mostly men, some women. So the question this morning is, after all this time, starting from our earliest history, why haven't we solved this problem yet? We've had over 300 years. We have the best of intentions. And yet somehow we're still talking about the same thing. You'd think we would have learned something by now. But here we are, once again, and I had an experience. This was a while ago. I was walking out of church one Sunday morning where there had been a very inspiring sermon about opposing racism. And one of the women standing close to me, a young woman, said, you know, it's the younger generation is going to make this, going to take care of this. And I laughed. I'm sure she thought, who is this crazy woman? And I said, would you like to see the younger generation? And I pointed at myself. We thought we were going to make a difference. It was the 60s. We could do anything. And yet, here we are. We could say, and I've heard people say this, well, I'm not a racist. I'm not a white supremacist. I'm colorblind. I had a situation that came up. I was at a meeting and we were talking about racism. And you know, I travel in circles that talk about stuff like that. My passion is social justice. And so these topics just tend to come up. There was a woman sitting in the room who was African American, and she said, I'm sitting right here. If you can't tell I'm a black woman, you're not just colorblind, you're blind. So what do we do? Some people write books, like Jim Wallace, and also Robin DiAngelo. I don't know how many of you have seen the book that's in our UUA bookstore called White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. We just don't want to talk about it because we might be implicated in some way. We might have to face the fact that we're not quite as loving and open-minded as we'd like to think. We look at our lives and we say, I can't be a racist. I don't have any of those thoughts. Well, I have to make a confession to you. I have discovered that I am a racist. Through no conscious effort on my part, I managed to imbibe the water of this country and the air of this country, and it is racist water and air. And so even though, and I thought this for a long time, and this is a moment of confession here, I thought for a very long time the fact that I had been an active participant in the civil rights movement in Atlanta, Georgia back in the 60s inoculated me for life. I got a pass. Well, here I am. I don't tell racist jokes. I don't laugh at jokes that other people tell. I don't call people of color bad names. And yet, many of us have what, and I just learned about this a few years ago, what they're now calling implicit racism. It's not that we try to cover up how we feel. We don't even know for sure how we do feel. But it's in there. I had an experience of taking, have any of you taken the Harvard anti-bias test? Any of you? Okay. Well, I took it feeling very self-righteous. And I got to the end, and I didn't do as well as I wanted to. And my reaction was to blame it on the test. You know, there I was. I said, you know, it must have been a high hand-eye coordination. It just went too fast, which is, of course, the point, because you're supposed to be reacting without thinking, just. And then I realized what I was doing. I was telling someone how this test was really not a very good measure of things. And then I realized I was doing it. I was failing to recognize what was going on. Because I didn't want to believe that that was possible. I went to, enough of the confessions after one more. I went to the Apple store to get my phone fixed. And I don't know if you've been there, you make an appointment, you sit there, and then someone comes over, one of these brainiacs that come over and help you. And I saw a young black woman with dreadlocks coming toward me, and my immediate thought, I didn't even need the test, thought, what on earth is she going to be able to help me with? Oh my gosh, where did that come from? No place I knew about. And of course she came over, we were both very nice, and she fixed my phone. Think about our language. This is a reading by UU Jackie James. She says, blackmail, blacklist, black mark, black Monday, black mood, black hearted, black plague, black mass, black market. Good guys wear white. Bad guys wear black. We fear black cats and the dark continent. But it's okay to tell a white lie. Lily white hands are coveted. It's great to be pure as the driven snow. Angels and brides wear white. Devil's food cake is chocolate. Angel food cake is white. We shape language and we're shaped by it. In our culture, white is esteemed. It is heavenly, sunlight, clean, pure, immaculate, innocent, and beautiful. At the same time, black is evil, wicked, gloomy, depressing, angry, sullen. Ascribing negative and positive values to black and white enhances the institutionalization of this culture's racism. Let us acknowledge the negative connotations of whiteness. White things can be soft, vulnerable, pallid, and ashen. Light can be blinding, bleaching, enervating. Conversely, we must acknowledge that darkness has a redemptive character, that in darkness there is power and beauty. The dark nurtured and protected us before our birth. Welcome darkness. Don't be afraid of it or deny it. Darkness brings relief from the blinding sun, from scorching heat, from exhausting labor. Night signals permission to rest, to be with our loved ones, to conceive new life, to search our hearts, to remember our dreams. The dark of winter is a time of hibernation. Seeds grow in the dark, fertile earth. We need both dark and light, light and dark. But we could say, remember the heroic Unitarian Universalist. Back in the 19th century, American Unitarians and Universalists like Theodore Parker and Benjamin Rush, in fighting for the abolition of slavery and supporting the Underground Railroad, John Haynes Holmes and the establishment of the NAACP and the ACLU, Unitarian Universalist minister and social activist James Reeb in Selma, who died on March the 11th, 1965, as a result of blows he received from one of four white men after dinner. After dinner that he had shared with two other ministers. He died several days later in the hospital. We don't know if he could have been treated, but he was not allowed to go to the closest hospital because they didn't trust what he had been doing that day. Many ministers and lay people, including the board of the UUA, went to Selma. They were called, and they came. Unitarian Universalist Viola Liuzzo was inspired to go to Selma from her congregation, where she lost her life to a sniper's bullet after she had transported black marchers from Montgomery to Selma. Modern-day fighters for racial equity in housing and health care and education and law enforcement, many of whom are Unitarian Universalist. But here's the question. Are things really any better today than they were back all those days ago? Or has our racism just gotten more subtle, more hidden? The words that we don't use because that would be not okay. We may have changed the laws, but I am convinced that we did not change enough hearts. And so we are still looking at a situation where although Unitarian Universalists may have done some incredible things, we remember the walkout in the late 1960s of a General Assembly because promises that had been made to the black community, black Unitarian Universalist, were not kept. When the former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Bill Sinkford, walked out with them, and fortunately, he came back. He was a young man who had believed the message he was hearing, and yet, when it really came down to putting into action, it didn't seem to be quite as true. But I don't want to spend a lot of time beating each other or ourselves up about this. That's not going to accomplish anything. Guilt is not a good motivation for doing something positive. But I submit that some of the attitudes that were a part of those early days in this country are still with us. And I don't want to get political, but I think the election in 2016 was an example of that. I don't know about you, but I woke up the next day and I said, I don't recognize the country that I'm in. That wasn't what I thought we believed. And here's something that really bothers me a lot. I grew up in the South. Somehow we've managed to blame this whole thing on Southerners. And maybe I'm just being a little too sensitive. But I just know from the things I've read and the people I've talked to, that's not true. This racism is not just in one area of our country. And it's not just restricted against African Americans. People of color of various shades are subject to racism. But we can use nice words. How about diversity? That's a good word, right? We want diversity. We want justice. We want multiculturalism. So why am I looking around this room and seeing not so much? And this congregation is not unusual. Most of our congregations are less diverse than we would like them to be. And yet, if we would like them to be all that much, why isn't that happening? We can come up with all kinds of stories. I just spent the last 2 days at a workshop in San Luis Obispo, where the channel cluster, both ministers and lay folks, and there were about 100 of us, participated in a program called Beloved Conversations with a professor from Meadville Theological Seminary, Mark Hicks. We spent our time kind of trying to remove some of the layers of what we say and what we do. It's really comfortable to be in a place where things are just the way they've always been, isn't it? One of my earliest sermons was, change is good. You go first. We don't like change. I mean, it's pretty comfortable. And if we brought in a bunch of people who had different ideas, then that might be really scary. We might lose members. Now that's scary. People might not like us. So what can we do? And this is not a simple answer, because it's not a simple question. What can we do? We can get educated, realize our own blind spots. And that takes a little, and I'm sorry to have subjected you to my confession, but it really is not comfortable to say, you know, I don't always act in the way that I would like to. So we need to educate ourselves, to become aware of the subtleties, things we may not even notice, things we may not intend. So you can read books like the one by Jim Wallace. You can read books by the one that talks about white fragility. You can get together in groups in our churches, and this is much easier with others. We can find the ways to act for good in our community. Here's one you may not have thought of. How many of you have seen the movie Get Out? Anybody? Okay, a few. This weekend, and I had seen it a long time ago, this weekend we saw a clip of it. And then we were asked to look at that movie and say, if you haven't seen that, it's a little strange. I would admit that. But there's a message under there that we need to hear. So if you haven't seen it, it's probably on Netflix now or something else. You can find it. We talk about our principles. They're great principles. I was so excited when they came out with the principles because finally I had something to pin my faith on. We believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That sounds great. But every person? I mean, there's some people I'm not sure about. And then there's justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. When somebody's cutting me off on the freeway, I'm not sure that I believe that person deserves justice. And then there's the interdependent web of all existence. We're all connected. So I'm here this morning not to say, look, I figured it out, because I haven't. But I'm here to say we need to keep working at it. We can do better. And it's not just about talking the right talk. It's about getting involved. Not being defensive. Saying, yeah, I really messed up. Saying, but we're all in this together. And finding the ways with help. Some of our black colleagues, friends, if you're lucky, they'll tell you how you messed up. If you're not, they'll try to say, oh, well, it wasn't a big deal. So we've got to be open to possibilities, not feeling like we've got to always be perfect because we can't, but trying to do, not just be, do the best we can. But I don't believe that simple tolerance is enough. That just means I'll put up with you. What we really need to look at is how we are going to be in the world. Not just tolerance, but sharing, being in community. You may have heard me say, and it's in our hymnal, a quote by the Reverend Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And because I can't do everything, I will not fail to do the thing that I can do. I think the most important words in our principles are, in fact, before any of the words we've heard recently. We affirm, and promote. What does that say? We don't just say the stuff. We do the stuff. We affirm and we promote. So all those other words are just extra. It tells us what we affirm and promote. I believe today, as the story that I shared with our children, that we need to be the good neighbors. And good neighbors don't do some of the things that are out there being done right now. We act for the good. We acknowledge our common values and we support each other with all of our different skin colors and beliefs and ideas and talents. And I hope that we can see the beauty in each person as we move forward without denying any of our culpability, to be honest, to move into the future. And the only question that is left is, when are we going to get started? I say, let's begin today and keep on moving. May it be so.